Fact Talk is an extension of the long-running, award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and banter with guests.
I'm John DeSando.
And I am Jordan Hanalami.
And this is Back Talk.
We got a little indie movie to talk about. Just
So I hadn't thought about it that way. Well, James Cameron's been around a while.
He has. One of the icons.
Yeah.
I think Terminator was 82? 84, maybe? Something like that. And he's been doing it.
Yeah, he's back 13 years after Avatar.
Yeah, and I would say, I don't know, I mean, this is one of the most prolific filmmakers, just in terms of every movie he makes an event.
I mean, he holds the record for the single film that made the most money, which was Avatar.
Uh-huh, and broke his own record in the process.
Yeah, right. So he has been doing it. And certainly has enough power to have a movie called Avatar: The Way of Water and make it over 3 hours.
Yes, that he did.
Holy gee!
A sequel that like you said, the biggest movie of all time, Avatar. But also, in a, I guess, kind of a strange way, as popular as the movie was, as much as people loved it, I don't think anybody was like necessarily clamoring for a sequel. It wasn't something we expected to happen,
right?
But he was, you know, bound and determined to keep the story going, and so we, as far as we know, not only have this one, there's a 3, a 4, a 5.
Well, they're ready for next year.
Yeah,
for number 3.
He's churning them out. So,
Jordan, what's the big deal?
Well, the big deal is spectacle. For sure. The visual of the first film was, you know, something that, you know, a lot of times when a movie's popular, it's, you know, a collective spirit of just, you know, something fun about a movie or something. But just the visual nature of it was something like we hadn't seen. And that was, you know, people needed to experience it in a movie theater, which, you know, is to you and I's heart to hear something like that from people. And that's what he's done again. It's a movie that needs to be seen on the screen, big screen.
Yeah, he's taken CGI to the next level.
Yeah, it's hard to say what is what's true and what's kind of myth that's been created around some of these movies, but, you know, essentially it's you know, one of the stories that I heard regularly is that he wrote the first Avatar in anticipation of where CGI and stuff was, but where it could be, where he anticipated it would be. So it was a movie that couldn't be made yet, and his ideas and things progressed CGI and stuff along to a point where they could do what he envisioned.
All right, so we have Pandora, which is a planet, an exoplanet, or something beyond the sun, beyond our solar system?
Yeah, John, I'm going to be honest with you. Some of the details of some of the storyline stuff is not going to be my strong suit. But it is definitely like there's an earthiness to it for sure. But much cooler.
So Jake.
Yeah, Jake Sully.
Yeah, starring by actor Sam Worthington, who may not get an Oscar.
No, probably not going to get an Oscar. And I'll tell, for those of you interested in the, longer version of this, that we'll tell a story, surrounding this movie with Matt Damon, in the longer, Back Talk version of this.
Good.
But,
all right.
Sam Worthington at the, you know, not your, everyday movie star. A lot of people probably don't even know his name. He's leading the biggest,
Well, that's true.
The biggest movie of all time and the sequel to it. So
he's playing somebody from Earth who's left. Pandora.
Marine, and his twin brother was the one who was in the first film. His twin brother was supposed to be the person that became a part of this project, where the name Avatar comes from. They're these bodies where they are, a human is being put into this body of one of these beings that's on the planet we're discussing. Then his brother dies and he fills in, but he has not had all the training that his brother's had, and he's just a brash young Marine that tries to jump in and ends up falling in love with the people that he is imitating or becoming. And yeah. then by the end of the first one, officially becomes one of them.
Yeah, these people are weird, yeah. Jordan. I mean, they're 10 feet tall. They're unusual. They're blue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tails.
Yes, with tails.
Yeah. There's definitely an, I guess, kind of an animal-like quality to them in the tails and the hissing and the, there's a, nature to them that is, well, nature, I guess, is the right word. That's what they're most connected to. And it's, you know, John, Big Jim is, not making any, it's not very subtle, his, you know, themes of nature and climate and the way that we treat the world and stuff.
Yeah.
Those are things that are very important to him and clearly are so in the way that the story progresses.
I'm glad you said that, because the storyline doesn't really knock me out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you started with a visual, and I think that's where the excellence is of this movie. But the story is, man, talk about a hot mess as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it's interesting, and I was thinking about this with the second one, is usually when we get sequels, you know, we're long experienced at seeing these, their stakes get higher. It's, you know, in the sequel, it's a bigger, they add more to things, whatever. But essentially the first film, it's the stakes are everything. It's these people's homeland being destroyed. And really, the stakes in the second one are just Jake Sully and his kids, because most of the movie is my kids are in danger. Now they're safe. My kids are in danger. This one's safe. Now this other one's in danger. Now it's okay. Like those are pretty much the stakes. Like there's not a lot of like stuff outside of that.
Right. Yeah, we have our old fashioned really bad guy played by Stephen Lang.
Oh man, I got to give a shout out to him. He is tremendous. I was so glad they found. I thought they did just fine enough, and I think they realized they needed him to have a sequel, because he was so good in that first one.
So he died in the first one, yes. but he's cloned,
mm-hmm.
and so he
as one of these avatar creatures that the people are
making. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And so he comes back and he's relentless in pursuing Jake.
Uh-huh.
And that's really the hub of this story is looking for Jake, and Jake finally realizing he has to transplant his family again. He has to get away.
Mm-hmm.
Joins a kind of splinter branch or a water. The avatar type, but water. But Jake has come from land. And then they have to go and seek shelter with people who specialize in the water.
It's wild, some of the similarities with Wakanda Forever. Like, it's just like,
good. Yeah, thank you.
It is like, you know, when we talked about it a while back, we were like, oh, there's water and there's the new avatars coming. But it's a lot of this movie is, you know, there's some real strong similarities with that. So that's kind of wild to have those two movies so close to each other.
And, Cameron had built somewhere a gigantic pool. So
is that okay? Yeah. I didn't look in. Yeah. End up looking. I meant to look into some more of the details of the production.
And it's huge. And because actually, there's probably very little of this film that isn't CGI related, and the water is one of them.
They people say it's, you know, some said like it's really so much of the. His last 25 years of his life have led to not just Avatar, but Avatar Way of Water. Because he, through the making of Titanic, became infatuated with the sea. Really the only other movies he's made since Titanic were, you know, this Avatar and Avatar 2. And it was all this deep sea diving and stuff that he was spending so much of his time doing.
Well, The Abyss? You know,
Oh man, that's a good movie. Underrated. That's one of his most
so
underrated.
He is a water guy.
Yeah.
He does that kind of for fun, doesn't he? Deep sea guy.
Yeah. And you're right. It did start before Titanic. Abyss was definitely an infatuation with water as well. So yeah, he is obsessed.
So Jordan, we're closing off our It's Movie Time at this point. And we know that the people who are really care about us and our blather mm-hmm. will go to Backtalk, which is the podcast experience on WCBE.
Yeah.
So don't, I can hear the phones ringing now saying, please, please don't stop. You guys are so good. We know all that. We've heard it all before.
Absolutely. Our landlines are open.
We have families out there, Jord, mm-hmm. and they're interested to know what you think, what you advise about the movie for them.
Yeah, I mean, it is, as you noted, storyline, not it struggles, but it is a visual treat. It is something to behold on the big screen, especially in 3D. 3D's gone by the wayside for the most part, with movies not utilizing it right. He utilizes it right.
Yeah.
So I would say see it in 3D, just get a ton of snacks because you're going to be there a while.
Yeah, it is. I'd have to say for little kids, probably not.
You're right.
Though, if I could fault Cameron, why do you have to make it that long? Yeah. First of all, kids can't stay
not
there.
That long.
And exhibitors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is money out of their pocket because you can't have that many showings during the day.
Yep.
It's very simple.
Right.
But after all, I just saw Babylon was over 3 hours.
Uh-huh. Movies, and I actually heard some, because I've been thinking about it too, but there's actually stats that movies are getting longer and longer, and it's crazy. Like, it's not just our imagination. It's like, because there's so many of these movies where it's like 2:20, and it's like, why is this over 2?
Yeah.
Like, it's, you just keep seeing that, but.
Well, Jordan, that gives me the opening to ask you, as far as I can tell, it is because serious directors like Cameron and Chazelle want to develop character, and this is the only way that they know they can do it, by having more time. Would you say that's probably the major reason? And producers are not ready to step in to tell these hotshots to have something that is only 2 hours rather than 3.
It is interesting because it's not like it's a brand new thing. Directors' cuts have existed for decades. But it's like, it feels like the prominent ones, the ones who've had the success, that have proved themselves in one way or another, it's like they're getting to make their director's cut first, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, that's
right.
The way it keeps feeling to me is like it, and so it's, I don't know. Yeah, it is really weird to me because of, like you said, the financial aspect of it, where there are less showings, there's less, you know, people, you want people in movie theaters right now. That still makes money. Like, that's worth doing. That's why, you know, a lot of people held out with Top Gun to keep it, you know, keep that theater thing going, because they made so much money off of it before sending it to streaming, where they'll still make plenty of money.
Right.
But it's just, it boggles my mind in that way, that there isn't more pushback. And, you know, some of it too could potentially, I don't know, some sort of tie in with, like, we'll let you make a longer, like, the, because so many things are going to, so many ideas are going to TV now, like, they're becoming episodic TV as opposed to movies. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's frustrating to me, because I do think there needs to be some pushback, like some, you know, give and take that.
When I think about it, just in a small matter, some of those shots are just too long.
Yeah.
You know, this is where I think a director could cut and be satisfactory for everybody.
Right.
You don't have to have such long shots. And I'm sure artistically, they it's very difficult.
Yeah.
If James Cameron were sitting here, we'd have no argument.
Yeah.
He would just trample all over us about his artistic.
Yep.
And if D.W. Griffith were sitting here,
for sure,
he would say the same thing.
It was tough with this one in particular, just because it didn't. There was just not very much meat on the bone.
Mm.
Like, it was, I rewatched the first one, which I had not seen since it came out.
Okay.
And in my mind, I had kind of fallen into, I think, what a lot of other people had that hadn't rewatched it, is like, man, that was a fun movie to see in the theater. It was a visual treat. But I in my mind, I kind of almost misremembered it as this kind of just drama that looked cool. And when I rewatched it, I was like, man, this was a cool movie. Like, it really was. It was 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Okay.
But there was a lot. You had more to do. You had to introduce the creatures. You had to have Jake acclimate to them. You know, there was just more going on. And so, to me, it didn't feel like it really. I was okay with that 2:45 for that movie.
Yes.
This one, we already had all that stuff established. It's all recurring characters. You know, it's mostly characters that we already knew coming back. So we don't have to meet people and stuff. And so it honestly, like, by the end, I was just sitting there thinking, like, this is just, this kid gets in trouble, he's in a dire situation, and then he's safe. And then this other kid, or then two of the kids get in trouble. It just kept being this, like, a kid is in peril, a kid is safe.
Yes.
A kid is in peril, a kid is safe. And it was like, we could have cut out, like, two of the segments of that.
No,
you know?
And
like,
they're cute kids. But
yeah, they are.
But if you think about it, it's just not important to the film.
Well, and the other ironic thing of it is I felt like the first 45 minutes were it was almost like there was stuff cut out, it felt like to me, where it was like they jumped from, like, thing to thing, where it was like, you could have fleshed this out a little bit so that I have a little more, like, it just had these sharp kind of transitions. I don't know. So that was a little ironic because it felt like it could have been longer at some parts.
But well, they certainly didn't foreshorten the last hour.
Yeah, no, not one bit.
I mean, if you want to think about cliches in hero movies, the battle.
Right.
I mean, this battle, Jordan, went on and on.
Yeah.
The only saving grace for me is there are fewer explosions in this film than I've seen in other films.
Yeah.
Jake and his family use arrows, bows and arrows.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I'm seeing less because that drives me crazy how many explosions. So besides length, I like to think about, I'm usually driven by character, as you often are too. Zoe Saldana playing his girlfriend, not his wife. They have a family, right? But I'm not sure they're married.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't remember if they had a union of some sort officially or if it was just the blessing of the parents or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But anyway, how about her?
I mean, I think she's really good. I think for the most part, I think most of the actors are good. Like, I don't mind most of the characters, I don't think. And I think she's a good, I guess, mother figure that still feels powerful. I shouldn't say still feels. That's not the right way to put that. A mother figure who feels like she is both motherly nature, you know, and stuff, but she's a badass. Like, she's in the fighting, you know, she is fighting and holding up just as much with everybody else as she should and does. And so I don't know. Yeah, I really like her a lot. It's interesting that she's had this career of being, you know, specifically in these two series where she is a green person and a blue person.
And, you know, as you were talking about her, I was thinking I really wanted more of her character developed.
Uh-huh.
Now, here you've got over 3 hours, and I'm one of the characters I'm really interested in is not really developed.
Yeah.
In her case. What about Sigourney Weaver in this? Did you see her?
A little bit, but not much. She's more because she passed away in the first
movie. She came back.
But she can't. Yeah, she came back as like
a different character.
Yeah, I didn't quite track on. I wasn't sure exactly what that was.
Isn't she Kiri?
It was her voice.
Isn't she like, Kiri?
I think so. Yeah,
the adopted daughter.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's her voice. I don't know. It was. No, I think couldn't quite figure that part out
because Cameron. Now, neither one of us claims to have any scientific understanding of all this.
Right.
But this is stop motion, basically, where the actors are the characters, playing the characters, but he has taken their reactions, and he has made them into whatever the blue people are, for instance. Which means, because if you look at it, you'll say, what's the... You know, what is the animation part of this? Well, it's really CGI.
When I believe it is, they're doing that, is it 8K transfer, where it's like, it's something that they've tried. They tried it first, I think, with Gemini Man, with Will Smith, and they've done it with some stuff, and it doesn't quite work, the high frame rate stuff.
Right.
Projectors haven't caught up some with some of the technology of that.
Exactly.
I think is how that works, but this looked pretty good.
Yeah.
And have heard people smarter than me say that this was one of the first times they've, our friend Hope Madden, I believe, I heard reference that it was one of the first movies she saw look good.
Oh, good. All right. And what they do is, I mean, basically, I think, is they speed up.
Yeah.
They speed up the film. Mm-hmm. Now, I understood some people who really know their business says a flaw in this is that sometimes with reaction shots, the other one will go back to the normal. Mm. And it's a little bit of an odd transition. If you're looking, I'm not looking carefully enough to know. Mm-hmm. But they were saying, you know, that's a little bit of the flaw in it.
Okay.
But Cameron, I think you're right. From what I understand, has seriously improved the image by in using this. He has also made the transitions much better. I mean, this is what he's been doing for 13 years. But gosh, oh, amazing.
Yeah. Well, so I wanted to make sure I brought this up because I think this is a really interesting thing about Avatar in general. When I was referencing the Matt Damon thing, and I don't know
anything about please do this. It. No, I'm anxious to hear.
So apparently Cameron offered that Sam Worthington role to Matt Damon first. Thinking that he needed a star to be to get the movie made and work and stuff like that.
Okay.
Not only offered him the role, offered him 10%.
Oh, no.
So
oh.
Let's say, which, you know, obviously that's not all things being equal. We don't know how the movie would have turned out, yada, yada. But let's just say it was the same. It was about $300 million that he would have gotten from that
role.
But all that being said, I don't think that first movie works as well with a movie star, not Matt Damon. I love Matt Damon, but I almost think it needs to be somebody like a Sam Worthington that we don't know, that we don't have a history with and isn't chewing up scenery and stuff and lets the rest of the movie happen around them. What do you think about that?
I think that's a great point. I agree with you completely. So the technical part of this, the ingenious part of it from Cameron, is really what propels this film and makes us go to see it. So it doesn't need a star. It doesn't have one, and I think you're right. It works even better.
But the first one didn't. This one, though, is what I think where I thought about it more, where I was like, now I could have used Matt Damon.
Wow.
I felt like this one could have used a movie star at
you're
the
right.
center of the – because there wasn't as much – you know, that, I don't know. So it was an interesting thing to think about.
Because we did have somewhere here Kate Winslet.
Uh-huh.
Is she playing?
She does. And I can't remember what the character's name was. It was I don't know if it was Ralph.
Ronal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really didn't know.
Yeah.
I knew that she was up, but I forgot she was going to be in it, so I didn't look for her.
I didn't either. I forgot about it,
too. She was this family, the Water family.
Yeah.
But there you go. You do have a pretty big star.
Yeah.
All the way from Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know, Jordan. I'm not done with this yet. I'm not done with Avatar, and James Cameron apparently is not.
Right.
Because we're going to have within the year the third iteration of this.
Uh-huh.
And it would be interesting for us to come back and to check out what he's added.
Yeah.
In all of this, because that's a serious adventure when you're taking something as far as he's taken it.
And investing, I think, his own money, his own time, obviously his own time, I think his own money as well. He's one of our, as we said, one of our most prolific filmmakers. And it's kind of like when, you know, I know it's, I'm not saying Michael Bay is as good, he's not, but Bay has his own, I love Michael Bay in his own right.
Yes.
But he spent 15 years or something making Transformers movies, you know, and you wonder what he could have been doing during that time.
Well,
and James Cameron is the same way, where I wonder to myself, you know, it's great, you know, these are spectacles and stuff, but this is the guy that made, you know, Terminator and even something like True Lies, which I love that movie so much.
Is that with Arnie?
It is. And it's just one of our last great action movies, you know, that just raw action
it's
movies.
It's a good choice, something a little bit different for Cameron.
And it would be, you know, just seeing him do something like that again would be really cool, you know. So anyway.
All right, Jordan Hanalami, what do you advise our audience? Here we have families out there waiting to hear.
Yeah.
Will you advise them?
Yeah. See it, you know, in 3D on a big screen with good sound and all that stuff. And just... be very aware that it is over 3 hours long and pack snacks accordingly.
So. Avatar, The Way of Water. Yeah.